Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
My name's Iris, and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah, Iris.
Hi.
I'm
really nervous. I've
had
a lot of people say that. I guess I'll just fast forward through the traditional format, which is experience, strength, and hope. My sobriety birth date is August 28, 2010. My home group is the Women's Book Study on College Avenue on Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor. And I'm a grateful alcoholic today. I like to check in and just say, like, what's working for me in my program right now. Service has been probably the hugest thing for me in the last, 4 months. It's kind of carried me. Having so many commitments at all my meetings really helped me get to my meetings. I think that being of service just helps me get out of myself and, you know, at least for an hour out of the day, I'm in a meeting and I'm just here to, be there for another alcoholic, and that's all that I can do for that hour, and I stay sober, so it's great. So what it was like, I come from a very alcoholic home. My mother is now an alcoholic, and my grandmother is still a very active alcoholic. I was raised with a stepdad as well who was very much an alcoholic. My mom is Hispanic, so I grew up in a Mexican-American home where basically, from Thursday to Sunday, it was what I thought that grown-ups do is you drink between Thursday and Sunday. And, you just pack up the refrigerator with a whole bunch of cooler lights and Tecate, and you just drink until they're all gone. And I learned that from a very early age. My parents used to throw a lot of parties, and that's also what I thought you do. You invite people over to your home, and you get really happy, is what I always thought that they were. And, when I got older, I got to see the damage it was actually doing to my parents, and, I guess some of the repercussions of the lifestyle that they chose. Fast forward, I'm 16 years old. My story doesn't really have drinking in high school. I got in trouble a few times. I was trying to be a really good girl. Whatever. I just wanted to get the hell out of my house. So I thought good grades would get me the hell out of my house because I could go to college. That was high school. But when I was 16 years old, my mother died, in a drunk driving accident. The drunk driver was her best friend, Carousel, and that was really difficult. I knew that they drank a lot. I knew that that's what they did, and that was a really hard consequence for them to have suffered. They're not here today, and I don't get to have my mother. So I had to go live with my father. My mom wasn't the richest woman in the world, so I'm a part of the welfare, I guess, as well. I had food stamps. But my father, on the other hand, was very affluent, and so I went from basically coming from, trying to eat whatever my mom would cook, which was just basically hamburger healthy all the time, to going to the Cosby's. It was really strange. I had two separate lives, basically. So now I'm going from a Mexican-American home to an African-American home. My dad's very supportive. I really don't know what I would do without him. I'm just so grateful for him, and I always have been. So my drinking started when I was in college. Somewhere around the age of 20, I was actually talking to my sponsor today saying that I used to drink the wimpiest drinks ever. With Smirnoff Ice and Mike's Hard Lemonade, the fruit punch, and I always would get so upset because I wouldn't get drunk. I was just why do I have to drink all these fucking things to get drunk? I don't even know if I am drunk because so much time has gone by. But all I know is that I really wanted to just get fucked up, and I couldn't. So when I was 21, I was introduced to whiskey, and that solved everything. I got drunk right away, and I drank a lot of it, and, you know, and then whiskey turned to vodka, vodka turned to tequila, and I just loved hard alcohol from there on, because it did the job. It did what I needed it to do. So in my experience, basically, it's, I got a DUI. I went to jail. Somehow in between all of that, I, graduated from college, got a job that was pretty decent, and I got to travel with it, but I'm still drinking through all this. And I got the job by lying, too. I hadn't graduated yet, but I told them I did. And they were too busy doing other things to check my credits, so I took the job. So I had a pretty awesome life, I thought. It wasn't. I was very lonely. I was very self-conscious. I was very self-absorbed. I had terrible depression. But alcohol solved all of that for me, temporarily. And it wasn't until the consequences got worse that I thought that maybe I should seek help. So I drank to just escape from me, because I've always had some really difficult shit happening inside of me that I didn't want to deal with. I didn't know how to treat people. During my drinking, I lost a lot of contact with my family, especially my father, my sister, my brother. I didn't have time for them. Drinking came first. My friends that drank came first. So in 2010, in May, in 1 month, I lost my job, my boyfriend, and my apartment. And then I thought, this fucking sucks. and I drank more. That was the simplest solution. And that was the first time I realized that, like, maybe I have a problem with alcohol. I had tried AA once before. I love hotlines. So I woke up from this hangover one morning and I just didn't know what to do. And I was like, what does AA do? Like, there's a hotline somewhere. And so I called the hotline and I told this man everything that was going on with me. He's like, yeah, I think you really should get yourself to a meeting. And he gave me this women's meeting, and I showed up, and it was wonderful. They were all happy. I got hugs. I mean, like, I could just cry and be like, oh my God, I was so drunk last night. And then I sat down, and I listened, and nobody was talking about drinking still. And I was like, hold on. So AA, you guys don't drink, like, at all? Like, and, you know, like, trying to backstep out of there. It didn't work. Yeah, people are too nice in here. You wanted me to keep coming back, is what you said. And that's not what I wanted. I only lasted about 20 days. I'm surprised I did. But every single one of those 20 days, I thought about drinking. The obsession was so strong that I did not have a program. I did not want to work this. I didn't want to call my sponsor. Therefore, I drank again. So in 2010, all of these things are happening, and my drinking gets worse. And now I'm back in Bakersfield, California, with my parents again, living on an air mattress in my sister's bedroom. And it was very humbling, to say the least. But that's when my family started to notice that my drinking was also a problem. I was very destructive in that short amount of time that I was home, and I still am so embarrassed about the things that I did. But you all know, like, you've had those experiences well, too, like kicking over the nativity scene and, you know, and, you know, trying to break into your sister's bedroom while she's sleeping at 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, that's what I did. So I had the great idea. I was also on unemployment at this time, too, so I had decided that I was going to either do 3 things. One was to go teach English and the second was to just stay in Bakersfield and get a job, and then the third, I have 1 minute. Okay, great. So let me wrap this up. Or to come to Oakland. And I said, you know what, I'm moving to Oakland. And that was it. That was, like, just the alcoholic thinking. I packed up my car and I moved to Oakland. I didn't know nobody. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know nobody. What happened was that I thought, this is my new start. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to change my behavior. In 2 weeks' time, I had drinking friends. I had a drug dealer. I had nothing. I mean, I was living out of my fucking car and getting tickets in San Francisco because I wasn't waking up enough time to move my car to the next block at 6 a.m. in the morning. It was insanity, and I felt terrible. And then just one morning, we have to get to that point. I guess we have to get to the point where we just feel like we need to kill ourselves, and that's how I felt. I really wanted to kill myself. So I called a hotline. And the woman talked me down and said that I needed to go see somebody, like counseling. So I drove, I made it to the Berkeley Free Clinic, but I sat down with that woman and I told her my story, and she said, you know, do you think you have a drinking problem? And I said, you know, AA didn't work for me. You know, those people don't drink. And she had also said that, well, do you think that you would be able to go to a meeting? And I was like, did you not hear what I was saying? My life's shit, and you want me to stop drinking right now? Like, drinking was my problem. I couldn't see that. I couldn't see that I wasn't dealing with myself, that that was my solution. And she said, I didn't ask you if you wanted to stop drinking. I asked you if you could go to an AA meeting. And that was like my higher power working for me. I couldn't even get to that point. When I walked in here the second time, I didn't know what was right from left. And you guys taught me all that here. You taught me how to deal with my problems without having to go drink. I knew this was going to happen. I'm so incredibly grateful. I have a relationship with my family that I couldn't describe how wonderful it is, and the love that I have, and the love that I have for the people I've connected to in this program, too. My relationships are real. I'm present today, and I'm just trying to experience all of this so I can learn and then share it from there on out. So thank you guys so much. Now I'd like to turn over the meeting to Jaime. And you'll speak until the end or whenever you feel like finishing.
So what would that be?
So that's like 9.
Okay.
That's yours.
Hello.
Okay. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Jaime. And to tell you the God's honest truth, I'd love to hear Iris's whole story. I mean, I'm willing to surrender my seat here and let her talk. But what I like the most from hearing part of your story is, like, when I choose people to speak, I think, wow, I really want the person to cry. You know, that's an out of the ballpark experience, you know, because for me, in AA, tears show gratitude. Like, I've cried a lot in AA. You know, I've cried because, you know, I've come in and I've been out of my head, or I've cried because I've been very grateful about what this thing has done for me. Because Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. You know, wholeheartedly, it saved my life. I don't know if I would be here, standing here. I certainly wouldn't be standing here. I don't think that I would be a free man. And I don't know if I would be alive. I probably wouldn't be a free man. When I hit bottom, you know, I think I was in a bad place. And it was only going to get worse. And that was basically the cards that were laid on the table for me. I went to my first AA meeting in 1989. I was in the military, and I got an Article 15 for fighting. At the company level, an Article 15 is basically 45 days pay and 45 days restriction. They bust you a rank, but I don't think I got busted a rank. I was too short. I was I was fixing to get out. Yeah. Like, the company commander was more or less like, okay, well, you know, maybe this military thing isn't working for you, you know, go out into the world. So I think I kept my rank. I was ordered to go to AA, and I did go to AA. And I had a similar experience to Iris where, you know, I went to AA, and the message that was there, you know, the obvious message because, you know, what I know now is that, you know, AA's message hasn't changed very much in 70 years. You know, it's one alcoholic talking to another. It's experience, strength, and hope. You know, it's like, well, this is what I did to get to where I am. You know, do you want to do this? You know, do you want to follow these steps? And, you know, and the steps could be literal or they could be, you know, metaphorical. They could, you know, whatever. I mean, let's put it this way. If I were drinking or if I were out there using, if I met you at a party, you know, and you pointed, you know, to a table and there was either a drink or a line or a whatever, you know, I wouldn't have any qualms of sticking my face in that, you know, and asking a question, you know, and, you know, can anybody empathize with that in here? I mean, I certainly would hope, you know, I could look at a couple faces. I could find one face in particular that would do that. You know, sure, man, let me get some of that. You know, and you're just like, what? You know. So then you come into AA, everybody says, welcome. You know, we're glad you're here. You know, here, can you do this? Can you take a commitment? Can you show up on time? You know, and you're just like, oh, man, I don't know. If I could do that, you know. I got something better to do. You know, there's something better over here to take care of, you know. You know, that's how AA is. So I went to this meeting, you know, in Wiesbaden, in West Germany, where I was at the time, West Germany. The message of AA was there. It went completely over my head. In 1989, I wasn't ready. You know, I was still too young, I guess. You know, I hadn't hit a bottom. I was forced to go there. You know, it was suggested that I go there. And I went there. And I tried to play nice, but, you know, it wasn't happening. So, that AA message went completely over my head. It was like Charlie Brown, you know. Womp, 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 womp. You know, get my slip signed, I'm gone. You know, and even further on, you know, it didn't occur to me that AA was there. I mean, that was just like such a blip, a low blip on my radar that I didn't even, you know, go back to that experience. I can talk to you about it now because I'm a little bit more clear-headed. But I wasn't ready for AA. And that would have been a nice time for me to be ready. I think I was, you know, late teens. I had just turned 20. You know, I was going to turn 21, or I was 21, and, you know, I wasn't ready to get sober. When I took my first drink at or about 14 or 15, I was allergic to alcohol right away. I mean, I was a swill drinker. You know, I can't get the stuff down my throat fast enough because I don't like the taste, right? You know, and I'm a blow it drinker. I'm the guy you don't want to hang out with because I'm going to blow it. You know? That guy, he's going to blow it. You know? You know, I'm going to pop off. I'm going to say something to somebody. I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to get into a fight. You know, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to follow you home. Kick in your door, you know, bang on your door and fall asleep, you know. And then when the cops show up, you know, they just, you know, get out of here. And, you know, all those years of doing that, of blowing it, you know, the worst that happened was I was handcuffed to a bench, released when sober, you know, RWS. That was basically it. When growing up in San Francisco, I went to Sacred Heart High School. This was the conveyor belt to the police department. What if they gave me a gun? Or firefighter. You know, there's a few firemen in my class. Class 85. You know, I see these guys, you know, on the street all the time. Some of them drink, some of them don't. there's this guy named Jose. He got sober, you know, Pepe. He got sober, like, right when we got out of high school. You know, he was in the Navy, and he got sober. And, you know, it's a trip to have him in my life today. You know, I don't chat with him all the time, but when I saw Jose after a long, long time, you know, on the banks of the Mississippi, in Minneapolis. We had, it was the last night of the first AA convention that I went to. You know, there was a big bonfire there. A few of my friends, this guy named Thor was there, you know, throwing logs into the fire, like he was tearing them out of the ground and like throwing them into the fire, you know, and here comes Pepe, Jose, and he's just all, hey, what's up, Jaime? You remember me? And I'm just all, yeah, I remember you. He goes, I need to make an amends. Come here, dude. Come on. I need to make an amends to you. And I'm just all, amends? What are you talking about? You know, and I was just a couple of years sober. And, you know, he made an amends to me. I mean, apparently he thought he was mean to me in high school. And I had no recollection, you know, when we were little kids. You know, like the last I remember was, you know, being at his cousin's house and listening to Do the Hustle. Everybody's dancing in some room. You know, talk about parties, you know, everybody's getting liquored up, you know, Do the Hustle's on the 8-track. You know, fools are dancing, and you know, and I guess Pepe was mean to me, you know. Okay. You know, because in high school, you know, we ran together, but we didn't run that deep, and, you know, it was cool. I loved Jose. You know, he's a good guy. Still is a good guy. So that was my first experience with amends in AA, you know, and I've had a lot of occasion, you know, because for me, my first couple of years, I think I was more on AA rather than in AA. I mean, even though my first night, I took a commitment. You know, Ed, my first sponsor, Ed H, you know, Ed, if you know Ed, you know, the guy, he's unbelievable, man. I mean, I love Ed like nobody's friggin' business, man. You know, I don't know if I'd kill for Ed at this point, but maybe. You know, the guy, he completely saved my life. He went above and beyond the call of duty. This guy, he gave me his phone number. 3 months before I got sober, things were getting real bad. I mean, I'm kind of jumping around, but basically, the first time I drank, I got sick, I blacked out. You know, I blew it. You know, I threw up, you know, like all within the span of like from here to there. You know, that's it. You know, and that's how I was. And that basically summed up my drinking career, you know. Coming out of a blackout on the Bay Bridge, you know, whoo, you know, into the rearview mirror, driving, and there's a CHP, you know, on my bumper, taking me over to the east side, you know, whoo, over to the side of the road where you see all kinds of fools pulled over. You know, this guy gave me field sobriety exams. He had me touching my nose, standing on one foot. You know, like walking, like I was all, you know, and he's just like, you know, it's 5:30 in the morning. He's like, listen, he's all, you know, he's got all my stuff, and he found a mirror with coke resin on it. The seat that was holding up my seat, I had a 59 Thunderbird. It was like held up by a half bottle of vino, a cheap handle vino, Chablis, and. Homeboy, the guy, the cop was like, he's like, listen, he goes, with all the stuff that I could write you up for, that I could charge you with, I would be at work, you know, until 11:30 or 12. It's 5:30 in the morning, there's not that much traffic. My daughter, she's got her graduation today, you know, I'm gonna drive you to the toll plaza. I'm going to watch you go back across the bridge. And if you can handle that, then I'll see you later and have a nice day. You know, and I'm serious as a heart attack. This will not happen today. This ain't going to happen. You You know, when was that? That was the mid-80s, man. That was the Reagan 80s. Kiss those goodbye. That ain't happening anymore. You know, so the guy saw me go back, boom, I'm gone, you know, yet again. My get out of jail free card, my Sacred Heart High School. One time I was sitting, you know, this is before I hit bottom. I think some guy came off a balcony next door to my building, you know. I was up there playing Donkey Kong or something, you know. Like, I was up there telling the guy what for. He was getting drunk, you know, breaking bottles against the wall. You know, I ended up trying to kick him in the face. I didn't kick him square in the face, but I caught him and nicked him in the face. He picked up a potted plant, you know, picked it up and threw it at me. And he forgot to let go. I just stepped on it. And this guy did a one-story face plant. Like, he accordioned, you know. And I'm sitting there going, oh, man. And I'm sitting there in court, the criminal case. You know, I'm in court, and the district attorney, or what do they call it? The DA, the district attorney. You know, he turns around and he goes, hey, you're Jaime Gutierrez. And I'm all, yeah. He goes, you were class, Sacred Heart class of 1985. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, hey, listen, I went to SI. And, you know, I saw this football game that you played in. I was just like in awe of you. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, that was me. It was me. But, you know, like, I didn't know this fool was in awe of me. He goes, we're going to take care of this. You know, he volunteers to the judge. He says, you know, this guy's going to go to anger management, you know, and we're going to take care of this. Serious as hell, I got out of it. I got out of it. You know, this guy's got this case against me, and it goes away. You know, I end up going to anger management. Does it help? No. I have issues with anger, yes. I'm an alcoholic, yes. You know, that's just another manifestation of my alcoholism, my bigger problem. You know, I hadn't hit bottom yet. You know, my next door neighbor upstairs, this woman named Rebecca. Becky, I just saw her a couple days ago. You know, she suggested to Ed that I go to AA. Ed, take this guy to AA. You know, Ed doesn't come right away. These other two gals, this girl named Tara, and oh my God. I forgot this other girl's last name. They took me to a meeting, and they took me to an NA meeting. They took me to three NA meetings, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't ready for that message. I mean, nothing against anybody that's ever gone to AA or NA, but I just, I couldn't dig what they were talking about. I thought everybody was a nerd. I'm not ready for this. Screw this. There used to be this meeting called Hug Tag in San Francisco. You know, people would see, you know, it was like, it was the weirdest thing, you know. And this is like, as a newcomer, you know, when you're new and you see this, it's like you retch. You know, you're sitting there going, these guys can't be sincere. This can't be real. You know, powerful, you know, yeah, man, fuck. And then they pick somebody else and they hug. Screw that. Ed saw me on the street. Ed, you know, I hear you're trying to get sober. And I knew Ed from cab driving. Ed and this whole host of characters that were sober, you know, friends of his. This guy named C. Giles. This guy named Jay Moxley. This guy named Shane Kramer. Yeah, they were sober cab drivers. Kelly Clark. They were sober cab drivers. You know, they would always talk to me after work. You know, I would be out of my mind, and they would sit there in the parking lot or on the street after work, and they, you know, for long periods of time, they would sit there and just talk to me. And I thought maybe, you know, these guys are just bored. You know, they got nothing to do. And they just want to talk to me. I mean, I don't know if they were 12-stepping me. You know, if you held a gun to their heads, they probably wouldn't tell you that they were. You know, they were just doing what came naturally. You know, they were taking an interest in me, right? Ed took an interest in me. He saw me on the street, you know. He goes, Jaime. He goes, I hear you're trying to stay sober, or you're trying to get sober. And I was just like, Ed, I'd like to get sober. You know, this was at the point where, like, for the last couple of years of my drinking, I wanted to get sober for the life of me. but I couldn't. You know, and ask yourself if you've ever been at this place, you know. It's like, you get up at, say, 8 in the morning, if you even get up, or it's 8 in the morning and you've been awake for, like, 5 days. And you're sitting there going, I gotta get sober, man. I gotta get sober. And you're hanging out with some guy that's been sober, but he ain't sober now. Are reading Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, you know, taking turns reading from that book. And you're just like, you know, I mean, that's why. You know, it's really, really wild. And you just can't do it. You know, by 10 o'clock, by 11 o'clock, you're off and running, you know, yet again. You know? So Ed says to me, Jaime, he goes, I hear you're trying to get sober. Yeah, Ed, you're right. Okay, I'm going to a meeting right now. It's noontime. He's going to High Noon in the city. And it was at 19th and Dolores at this time. We were standing on the corner of 15th and Valencia. And I said, no, Ed, I'm not going to go to a meeting right now. He goes, okay, here's my phone number. He goes, when you need it, call me. When you need me, call me. Anytime, day or night. That's how AA works. I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's helped me stay sober. Just call me, man. All right, Ed. Thanks. I go walking in my direction. He goes walking in his direction. I look at this phone number. Throw it away. Seriously, threw it away. So then a few months later, I'm sitting in jail for an extended amount of time. And this time it got serious. I mean, seriously, for me, the person that's been in jail longer than 3.5 days, God bless you. You know, I know people that have been in jail for 30 years, you know. God bless them. You know, it's not me. Can't do it. That'll make me cry. You know? I go to no motherfucking day. You know? Excuse me. I mean, I'm not making a joke. Seriously. I stand here in front of you sober because I don't want to go to prison. And, you know, in AA, you hear all kinds of things. You know, you hear, keep coming back. You hear, you know, young people's convention, man, we're having a dance, we're having this, we're having that, you know, whatever. You know, you hear all kinds of stuff. I've heard always, when you drink after a long time of being sober, you go back to the place where you were before you got sober. And it happens like that. And I've been sober long enough that I've been standing at an AA meeting and somebody's turned to me and says, did you hear Dante drank? And I'm sitting there going, Dante drank? Yeah, Dante drank. And within days, Dante's dead. And you're just like, huh? Dante's dead. You know, and then a few days after that, you're at Dante's funeral, you know, or Tie-Dye Paul's funeral. You know, and everybody's sitting around scratching their heads going, what happened? And what happened is that we have a deadly illness. You know, we have, somebody said one time, you know, my disease is like Muhammad Ali. It wants to kick your ass, you know, and it wants to do a number on you, and it'll step back, and it'll let you try to come back, and it'll swing, and it'll let you have one, and then it'll let you have it again. And I believe that. I absolutely believe that. So for me, I don't want to go back to the place I was. So I was toting around a loaded handgun, and I started to get paranoid. I thought people were after me. You know, standing on the corner, somebody's going on the dirt, you know, they're coming up behind you, and you're just like, oh, man, you know, I thought people were after me. You know, people looking through the blinds at your house, you know, you see shadows. You know, have you ever had that feeling? That's no good. That's not comfortable. But, you know, standing on a corner. You know, there's some gangbangers. There used to be gangbangers that stood on 24th and Mission all the time, like from the 70s to, you know, to the early 90s. You know, and these guys would not screw around, man. They were not playing. And I remember more or less telling those, you know, like, did you say something? You know, both, you know. And these guys, when they saw me come into jail, man, they were like, hey, you know, good to see you. And I was sitting there going, oh, no, man. Oh, no. And so what ended up happening with this loaded handgun is some guy got out. I was driving a taxi cab, and this guy grabbed me by my lapels, and he kneed me 3 times in the stomach. And the gun jostled itself and went down my pant leg. It didn't go off. I mean, it should have shot me in the ass, and that would have been the end of it. But it hit pavement, and when it hit pavement, the bullet that was in the chamber and the magazine that was in the stock ejected itself. Now, that's a miracle. That's miracle number one. You know, miracle number two is that I didn't kill this guy. You know, because when I brought it up to his face, you know, and he's like, crap in his pants. He runs off into the night. I look down and I see it. It was like there was a moonlight coming down onto the you know, and I get in my car and off I go, and you know, the cops are radioing about an hour later, and I'd already come up with an alibi. I'd already gotten rid of the pistola. It went back to where it needed to get to. You know, one of my friends that's around here now, you know, he could tell you that story is true. You know, and I've, you know, this guy bailed me out, actually. He got me out of that situation, because when I was sitting there, when I went back to the company, the cab company, the cops were there. They were looking to see what had happened. You know, where was this weapon? Where was this? Where was that? The sergeant came down. Sergeant of the detail came down. And this guy went to Sacred Heart High School, class of 1955. He went to high school with my uncle, Ray. And I sat in the front seat, and I rode down to 850 Bryant with this guy, and he's telling me, son, this doesn't look very good for you. You know, and I'm just like, you're absolutely right. You know, I've made a big mistake, but to tell you the truth, you know, this is what happened. And I even wrote it down, my alibi. The gun came off of this guy, and then these guys got into the cab, and they wanted to go over to the East Bay. I didn't want to go. They said they had a gun. They got in, you know, they went away, the gun went away, and that's where it went. You know, I was de-escalating the situation by taking the gun off this guy. You know, what really happened was that God saved my butt. And then, miracle number two, I'm sitting there in the holding cell, you know, standing up. Everybody's laying down. I'm standing up going, man, this blows. And on Channel 2 News that morning, December 7th, 1997, a yellow cab driver picked up a loaded Eddie and Leavenworth, and within 15 minutes, he was dumped, shot, left for dead at Eddie and Leavenworth, or Eddie and Laguna. You know, they didn't find the cab for 3 days. You know, the perpetrators were never found. You know, so that was miracle number two. Right when I saw that happening, I hit my knees. And that's what happened. It went away. Because this guy that I got into it with never came back to make a formal complaint against me. You know, and I had to sit there for 3 days. And my friend Patrick had to bail me out. You know, he bailed me out because these guys from 24th Street were sitting there in the pod waiting for me. You know, and I'm sitting there reading the AA Big Book because it was on the little cart. You know, I'm just like, H and I right here, man. I'm reading this book, and I'm right here. And I sat there, and I just was, you know, I didn't go to sleep, man, for that whole time. And I saw my life pass in front of me. It was like an acid trip. You know, people from your life passing by. Baby Alex from Glen Park was in there for pimping. And Gerald Williams was a sheriff's officer. This was a guy I played football with. He was a sheriff's deputy walking by, sees me, and he goes, Jaime, what are you doing in there? You know, and I'm telling him the story. I tell him the story, and he's just all, oh no, that doesn't look good. And I'm just all, you're absolutely right, man, but I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to get out of here, and I'm going to get sober. I remembered Ed's phone number. I'm running down the street. You know, this isn't a case where I'm just going to go, oh, it's time for me to get sober. This is all part of the story. I'm running down the street. I never felt so free in all my life. I mean, even after I got out of the service and they said, get the fuck off my fort, I was jamming down the street. I was just like, oh, my God, man. You know, I ran down. I went to 8th and 8th and Harrison. There was a row of phone booths. Phone booths. Remember when they had phone booths? What's Superman doing today? There's no more phone booths. You know, I called up Ed. Ed, I'm ready to go to AA, man. I'm ready now. I'm so ready. Walked home. I was just like, man, I've never been so free in all my life. And I just had that lingering notion. You know, and the lingering notion wasn't, you know, I'm going to drink again, or maybe I'm going to get over this time. The notion was this. If I go back on my word now, I'm going to get screwed. I'm going to get screwed. And when Ed took me to my first meeting that night, my first meeting to stay, you know, 1350 Waller, Haight-Ashbury Friendship Group on a Wednesday, you know, at 8:30 at night, a few more minutes. Shane Kramer was the secretary, you know, Laura, she got elected secretary. You know, Ed nudged me because they were turning over commitments. This girl named Machko shared, you know, Machko. She's crazy. I've seen Machko. I saw Machko like a month ago. Couldn't believe it. It was like, you know, like I wanted to touch her. She had a crazy story. Ed nudged me. I wanted, you know, take a commitment. I took a commitment, and I've been here ever since. And I'm telling you, man, Ed opened up his AA world to me. He introduced me to people. You know, he introduced me to Brian H. You know, I didn't know Brian H. from Adam. You know, I didn't care. You know, here's this guy that's been sober for a long time. Get to know him. And Q, get to know her. Chuck S., get to know him. You know, all these people, and the thing about it, for me, the miracle, the other AA miracle for me is that these people are still around. I still go to meetings, I turn around, and there they are. You know, these people that were there when I first got there. Because at this point, what I come to realize is I'm not doing this for me as much. Well, I am doing it for me. I'm trying to stay sober. But I'm also doing it to pay homage to them, to these people that welcomed me. I mean, I was a misfit. You know, I didn't know what I was saying. I didn't know what I was doing. I was uncomfortable and just like quaking in my shoes when I first got here. You know, and I didn't know which way was up. You know, and this guy named Danny Z would raise his hand and just say, well, you know, there's this announcement, there's this other thing going on. And I just, fuck you, stick with him. This guy's killing me. You know, my alcoholic. Alcoholic was bending my mind, you know, and that happens today. It happens today, man. On any given day, at any given meeting, you know, if something just clicks in me, and that's my alcoholic today, if something clicks in me, I go completely insane. You know, I lose it. You know, and when they talk about halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, you know, is it that because I'm, you know, am I hungry? Am I not, you know? My sponsor used to always tell me when I'd call him up, Robert, this is insane. Oh, just, Jaime, did you pray today? Jaime, did you go to a meeting today? Jaime, did you make AA your number one priority today? You know, God first, AA the most, everything else falls in line. You know, and like I'm sitting there as a newcomer or as someone with, you know, a few years going, no, no, no. This is not going to work for me. I'm a special case, you know. You know, and it's a gift. It's a gift to either A, see that in somebody else today, or B, experience that all over again. because even though that wave sometimes is too much for me, you know, I know there's hope, man. I know there's hope, and I start to tread water, you know, and I breathe, and it's okay. You know, today, I'll close with this, because I'm going from the first step to the 12th step. You know, maybe I'll do the 10th step, you know, the 9th step. Maybe I'll make amends to you, but I'll tell you this much, man. If you just do a little bit, you know, if you just put in as much time to this as you did to drinking, you know, because I'll tell you what, man, if it's 2 a.m, I'm jamming to the liquor store, man. I'm going to get there. I'm going to fucking bag. You know, open up, man. I'll give you $50. If I got $50, right? Am I going to do the same for my sobriety? You know, that's the question that I have to ask myself on a daily basis. Am I going to do the same? I've done so much in AA, man. I could talk about this for another couple hours. We don't have time. Thank you.
I would like to re-welcome the newcomers and visitors. And then let's thank tonight's speaker again, Jaime.
You guys, so I don't know if I mentioned this, but, you know, I love all these people. I love Danny Z today. Without a doubt, I wouldn't have made it without him. So let's say a prayer for Danny Z. And he's okay, because I know he's got a lot on his hands right now. So. And for any alcoholic that's hurting or hasn't made it into the room tonight. We'll go with the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back, it works.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.